Thursday, November 29th, 2018. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly. I am coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado. And if you are tired of the same old sports talk, if you are tired of the arguments and the callers that yell things like, "I think the Browns rule, I'll hang up and listen," hang out here for a while. Trust me, you're going to like it a little bit better. We talk sports with a dose of common sense. We'd rather just laugh at a lot of the sports world because a lot of it is actually funny. And we are happy to have you here with us today. Happy Thursday to you. You know, it was back in 1987 on this day, November 29th, that Joe Montana of the San Francisco 49ers completed an NFL record at the time, 22 consecutive passes in a win over the Cleveland Browns. Montana ended up going 23 for 31. He had 342 yards and 4 touchdowns. And remember, when Montana did this back on this day, you could still hit the quarterback. You could still hit the wide receivers. It wasn't the era that we are seeing right now. Now, we know that record he set of 22 consecutive passes completed in a row has been broken by a few different people. Even as recently as Philip Rivers, Ryan Tannehill, Marcus Mariota put up some big numbers. Might have to talk about those a little bit later. But you know, back to Joe Montana. When I think of Joe Montana, I just kind of always wonder, when he hears about all these quarterbacks today, when he hears about guys like Tom Brady, he hears about Drew Brees, he hears about Aaron Rodgers, and they're all talking about, is Aaron Rodgers the greatest quarterback ever? Is Tom Brady the greatest quarterback ever? Is Drew Brees now the greatest quarterback of all time? Are they the GOAT? And Joe Montana has to be sitting there going, you know, I went to 4 Super Bowls. And unlike Tom Brady, I don't have a clue what it feels like to lose a Super Bowl. I never did. Every single Super Bowl I went to, I won. When you look at Tom Brady walking off the field dejected, and you see Tom Brady after losing to Eli Manning twice, losing to Nick Foles, Joe Montana's like, yeah, I have no idea what that feels like. It never happened to me. Wasn't even really all that close. And you know, the interesting thing about Montana, I know that a lot of people think back and they go, well, yeah, but Joe Montana was surrounded with a ton of talent. And he was. Think back to John Taylor, Jerry Rice, Roger Craig. But remember, Joe Montana did also do it with guys like Freddie Solomon and Charlie Young and Dwight Clark and Wendell Tyler. Don't forget, it wasn't just with that great Hall of Fame group that he had later. He won it earlier as well. You know, we have such short memories in sports, and it is no more evident than when we bring up Joe Montana, because people have completely forgot how good he really was. If you'd like to contact the show, maybe let us know a player that you feel sports fans tend to forget. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or reach out to us over on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at dailydosesports, and it doesn't have to be Joe Montana related. It could be a suggestion. It could be some feedback. Maybe you need a little advice from us here at The Dose. You know we are great at handing out advice. Reach out to us. We would love to hear from you. Hey, and also don't forget, if you head over to tpublic.com, you can check out some of the new Daily Dose gear that is over there. Makes a great stocking stuffer for that Daily Dose listener in your life. If you need to finish up some of that holiday shopping, make sure you stop by tpublic.com. You know, we've got a lot to get to today. We do have a few stories coming out in the world of sports that I want to discuss. And you know, I want to talk a little bit about the college football playoff today. And as we do on most Thursdays, we've got a couple of sports media overreactions of the week, because it seems like every single week, we are being told things by the sports media world that don't always make the most sense. On Thursdays, we like to look a little closer and examine what it is that they're telling us. Lot to get to today on The Dose. Let's start off in college football, where it looks like Georgia Tech head coach Paul Johnson is going to be retiring after 11 seasons down with Georgia Tech in Atlanta. Johnson is now 61. He has gone 82-59 at Georgia Tech. Overall as a head coach, he is 189-98. Now, Paul Johnson guided the Yellow Jackets to the ACC championship back in 2009. He finished first or second in the Coastal Division in 7 of those 11 seasons. Pretty impressive stuff for Georgia Tech. Of course, Georgia Tech lost to rival Georgia 45-21 on Saturday. They will finish the season 7-5 and are awaiting a bowl assignment, which would be Johnson's 9th bowl while down at Georgia Tech. You know, Johnson is one of the few college coaches left in college football who still runs an option-centered offense with that whole flex bone spread that he runs. He ran the same system at Navy before he ever went to Georgia Tech. And I know that Paul Johnson has a reputation as being kind of tough to work with, but I don't like losing these option guys. And I know that right now in college football, it's all about the spread. It's all about throwing the verticals. It's all about getting the ball down the field as far as you can. But you know what? College needs some of these option coaches. And if some of these schools that are out there that are struggling to keep up with the big boys had any sense whatsoever, they would go get a Paul Johnson disciple, install an option system, install an option guy, and instantly become a pain within their conference. If I was at a school like, I don't know, Colorado in the Pac-12, or maybe Nebraska, and I know Nebraska is going to get the whole Scott Frost thing going, I'm telling you, I would switch to option, and every single week within our conference that you had to play us, you'd be going, oh, I don't want to play them in that stupid option. It drives me crazy. That is absolutely what I would be doing at one of those schools. I don't know if anyone's going to do it, but look at the success that Paul Johnson had down at Georgia Tech. Doesn't make any sense, but running the option can balance the playing field a little bit, and it makes you so tough to prepare for. College football will miss a guy like Paul Johnson. Switching over to the NFL, you know, we told you that Jacksonville Jaguars running back Leonard Fournette was probably going to get hit pretty hard by the NFL for that fight on Sunday when he came off the bench to fight Buffalo Bills defensive end Shaq Lawson. And the NFL did indeed suspend Fournette for one game. And then yesterday, Fournette lost the appeal of that one game suspension. He will be missing Sunday's game against the Indianapolis Colts. The NFL came out and said Fournette violated its unsportsmanlike conduct and unnecessary roughness rules, and they are sticking with that suspension. Lawson was also ejected after the incident in Buffalo's 24-21 win, but we haven't heard any discipline on him yet, probably because he didn't leave the bench. Here is my question though. When the NFL Players Union tries to appeal this discipline for Leonard Fournette, how ridiculous is their argument, do you think? Like when they get in there behind closed doors, what silliness are they saying? Look, we know Leonard left the bench, and we know he punched Shaq Lawson in the helmet. And both of those things are in direct opposition to the rules of the game. But I mean, we also sort of feel like this is just another case of Roger Goodell trying to keep a good man down. I mean, what are you possibly saying? We all saw you do it. What possible argument do you have? The NFL Players Union has just turned into a bad defense attorney. They know full well their client did the crime and that they should be prosecuted. But they have to lob out some stupid, flimsy excuse. Well, he thought there was a fly on Shaq Lawson's helmet. What nonsense are they possibly saying? The NFL's Players Union sometimes really leaves you scratching your head with some of the arguments they try to make. Finally, switching over to college basketball, we heard a really odd statement yesterday. In the aftermath of Duke's first loss of the season last weekend, Mike Krzyzewski is asking fans to dial down the hype that has been surrounding his young Blue Devils to start the season. He says that fans should appreciate the growing pains that could still be coming for this still very young but very talented group of freshmen. Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, and Trey Jones were all top 10 recruits, and the early results have been amazing. This young Duke team looks like they are going to be very good. They are definitely going to be a contender this year, even though they're that young. But after Duke fell to Gonzaga last weekend, Krzyzewski thought there was a pretty big overreaction, not by the media, but by Duke fans. Asked after Tuesday's dominant win over Indiana if Barrett in particular had taken the loss hard, Krzyzewski argued that several key fouls hadn't been called and the overreaction that followed them losing to Gonzaga was problematic. Here's what Krzyzewski had to say. And Duke fans, just cut it out, man. These kids aren't perfect. That's how he talks, isn't it? Pretty sure that's Mike Krzyzewski. Let's get real about this whole thing. Let's not get spoiled. We've got four 19-year-old kids that are trying to learn how to play and have a lot of pressure on them. Wait, hold up. I want to hear that again. Mike Krzyzewski, maybe the greatest college basketball coach in history, a highly intelligent person who is a teacher of young people, just told Duke fans, and by Duke fans, I mean people named like Weston and Miranda and Steele and Chase and Molly. He told those fans to not get spoiled. He said, let's not get spoiled. Hey, I'm not bashing Coach K necessarily. I know he's a really smart guy, but are you seriously going to tell kids that are attending Duke that received like vested stock funds for their third birthdays to not get spoiled? Come on, Coach K. Be smarter than that. Seriously? You're going to tell Duke fans, do not be spoiled. Yeah, something about that might not be making the most sense. Not bashing Coach K. Very, very smart guy. Smarter guy than I'll ever be. Not be spoiled? Duke fans? Come on now. Okay, coming back. This weekend, we've got a very, very good weekend of college football. We've got conference championships coming that are basically playoff games for the college football playoff. And yet, there is something about these games that is kind of bothering me. We're going to have to talk about that when we get back. Okay, so here is a question for you, Daily Dose listener. What if, instead of having these conference championships that we have right now, what if this weekend, instead, we had an 8-team playoff? See, if there is a problem that I have with this weekend, it is that not every team playing in these conference championships has as much on the line. Take a look at, say, the Big Ten. Does Ohio State have a ton on the line? Yes, they have to win. Not only does Ohio State have to win, in my opinion, they've got to win convincingly. Meanwhile, their opponent, Northwestern, what are they going to do? Say they win. Hey, great win for us. Say they lose. Who cares? Doesn't really matter to them. They're not going to the playoff. It really makes no difference to Northwestern. Take a look at the ACC. Clemson needs to win to get in. I don't think their strength of schedule is strong enough that if they were to lose, I don't think they'll still get in. I don't think there's any chance of that because the schedule has been so weak. But if they win, I believe Clemson is getting in. They're facing Pitt. What is Pitt playing for? If they lose, who cares? We're supposed to lose. If they win, yay, I guess we go to the, I don't know, Blue Bonnet Bowl. I mean, what difference does it make? But what if at the end of the regular season, we just took the top 8 teams that were ranked in the top 8 spots and we just played it off? Is it that complicated? Is this that hard? Forget the conference championships. Get rid of those. They're just a money grab anyways. Look at Alabama. What does Alabama have to gain this weekend in that conference championship? Nothing. What do they have to lose? Could be everything. What if Alabama just doesn't show up? What if Alabama's just flat? They have nothing to gain. They would be better off not playing that game. When the regular season ends, we don't need these conference championships anymore. They're kind of outdated. They were fun back when we didn't have anything. They were fun when we were saying, hey, they're just kind of picking two teams and hopefully they line up and we're just going to make that a national championship game. Okay, well, play off some sort of a conference thing and then maybe we can get a better idea of who are the best teams. But now, we don't need them anymore. So today, instead of looking forward to the conference championships, let's do something else. Let's travel to the land of make-believe, boys and girls. Let's see what it might look like if we just had a top 8 playoff starting this weekend instead of these conference championship games. The first game on the list, and this game might be a little bit rough this year, but we would be seeing number 8 Central Florida going to Alabama to face the number 1 Crimson Tide. Now, we know Central Florida lost their starting quarterback, Mackenzie Milton. He had that awful leg injury. And that would definitely kill the hopes of Central Florida. Although, I mean, maybe the backup comes in and he plays great this weekend. I don't have any idea. But wouldn't you love to see Central Florida get the chance? At least put him on the big stage. Hey, you've been saying for the last 2 years, you want Alabama. Okay, you got him. Face Alabama. Let's play this off and let's see how this looks. I have a feeling it might not go well for Central Florida. I think Bama probably wins this game by 25 plus, especially without Milton. I don't know if he would make that big of a difference, but I think without Milton, Alabama strolls in this game. They get the first win of our 8-team college playoff. The second game on the list, and this might actually be a more interesting game than you might think, but you would have number 7 Michigan facing number 2 Clemson. Now, we know Michigan is coming off of that awful loss to Ohio State, but maybe they would be playing loose. Maybe they would be playing without all of the pressure on them. This is the year you have to beat Ohio State. Okay, that's over. You're not beating Ohio State. But could you go out and give Clemson a game? We know that Michigan's defense is better than they showed against the Buckeyes. I still struggle with the idea that the Michigan offense would be able to keep up with the Clemson offense. And I think the Clemson defense would slow that Michigan offense down. I would say this game could be close early. Clemson ends up pulling away. There's game 2 of our 18 playoff. Now, our next game, if it was taking place on Saturday, honestly, I don't know who I'd pick. You would have number 6 Ohio State going to number 3 Notre Dame. Notre Dame has consistently looked solid all season. Granted, they haven't played the most brutal schedule. Meanwhile, Ohio State looks good, I don't know, sometimes? Not very often? They did look good against Michigan, but I don't have any idea if they can do it 2 weeks in a row. I don't know if they can do it against Northwestern, let alone Notre Dame. Notre Dame's better than Northwestern. I know that. We saw that. I mean, I guess I would go Notre Dame here, but I don't know that it would be a dominant performance. I would pick Notre Dame in this game, but again, Ohio State. Hey, if they bring their A game, maybe this is a better game than we think, but Ohio State versus Notre Dame is game number 3. Finally, our final game of the first round of this playoff would be number 5 Oklahoma versus number 4 Georgia. Every single year under this format, the 4 versus 5 matchup would be so amazing. The Oklahoma offense, they're going to find ways to score points. They just do. The Georgia offense is going to go crazy here against that Oklahoma defense. I probably am taking the team that has the football last. I don't have any idea who that is. I might be flipping a coin. And just for the sake of argument, let's say it's Georgia, and then we move on to the round of 4. Now, we have, in the final 4, number 4 Georgia versus number 1 Alabama. Instead of this game taking place in the SEC Championship, now it's a Final Four matchup. And it's a matchup we all want to see. And now it has a loser-goes-home kind of quality. If you lose it here, you're done. The season is over. Do not forget, Georgia did push Alabama to overtime last year in the national championship game. If this game is anywhere near as entertaining as that one, oh, this is a home run. I want to see Georgia versus Alabama. I'll take Alabama, but who knows? Maybe Georgia has something for them. And then in the second game, you have number 3 Notre Dame versus number 2 Clemson. I think Notre Dame actually matches up really well with Clemson. So this could be a better game than anyone thinks it is. I guess you give Clemson maybe a slight defensive edge. I don't know. So let's just say there are no major upsets. Everything goes according to the rankings, and we end up with number 2 Clemson versus number 1 Alabama. Okay, fine. But we know that probably isn't what would happen. That's not what usually happens. There are always surprises. You would get upsets, and you just never know how 18 to 19-year-old kids are going to deal with all the pressure. That is, at the end of the day, why we play these games, isn't it? That is why it is so hard to win money in Las Vegas, because we don't truly know what's going to happen. We think we know. We're pretty sure about it, but we're not always sure. I don't think every single top seed would win if we played it off this way. I think you would see some upsets take place. And you know, I do think it is just a matter of time before the current playoff contract gets broken and we end up with an 8-game playoff. And as you can see, it would be so much fun to be playing these games off instead of these silly championships involving teams that shouldn't be involved. Northwestern shouldn't be playing in a playoff game. Washington and Utah shouldn't be playing in playoff games this weekend. They're not even relevant. Why in the world is Pitt playing in a playoff game this weekend? We don't care about Pitt. No one cares about Pitt. Eliminate the conference title games and keep these games rolling. As soon as the season ends, we don't need to be waiting 2-3 weeks, a month for these bowl games, for these championship type games. Just keep the season rolling. The Final Four in college football has been a step in the right direction. There are still aspects of it that appeal to me. But eight teams allow for underdog teams to get in. It eliminates some of the silliness. You can still keep your bowl games. You can still keep the sanctity of the bowl games. And you can still keep an interesting regular season. I don't think that would be compromised in any way. But an 8-team playoff would allow for teams to bounce back from an early season loss, still keep the excitement of that regular season. Can we please get this 8-game playoff to happen sooner rather than later? It's coming. There's too much money out there to think it's not coming. I just wanted to hurry up and be here because it would be great to see it on Saturday. Hey, coming back, we do need to get to our Thursday sports media overreactions of the week. You know, a usual target of us here at the Daily Dose is getting some credit. And I don't know if he deserves it or not. And are we witnessing some of the greatest performances ever this year in the NFL? Talk about those when we get back. Hey, just a quick reminder that if you have any shopping to do, and now we are officially into that silly season where you've got to do all of that holiday shopping, maybe you have someone on your list that you're not exactly sure what to get, you need to make sure that you stop by lootcrate.com/dailydose, where you can find the latest pop culture collectibles that feature your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. December's Loot Crate theme is now out. It is called Scavenge. What you build depends on what you can scavenge. We've searched through the rubble. We've made some fortunate finds, from the fantastic to the downright alien. So get ready for a collection of seriously cool exclusive gear. December's Loot Crate theme features items from Transformers Bumblebee, Dungeons & Dragons, Escape from New York, and Fallout. But if none of those franchises interest you, remember, you can always go over to Loot Crate and you can choose from a huge selection of crates, or you can just go over there and find individual items, and they have just about any franchise you can possibly think of over there. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, just be sure that you type Daily Dose in the coupon box. We are going to get you 10% off of your order just as a little thank you for tuning into the Daily Dose every day. So don't worry about what to get that difficult person on your holiday shopping list. Just make sure that you stop by lootcrate.com first. You know, sometimes I wish that the sports media world wasn't just saying things they don't even believe to try to get silly clicks, but they do it every single week. And on Thursdays, we like to take a little bit of a closer look at some of the goofy things they say, see if they make any sense whatsoever. So every week, we take a look around the sports world, see what overreactions they might be jamming down our throat.
I don't know what we're yelling about!
Only a couple this week, mostly because everybody's too busy anticipating college football this weekend, but I did have a couple of overreactions coming out about the NFL. And the first one was about longtime Daily Dose punching bag Dallas Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett. Here is what we are being told in the sports media world. Dallas Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett deserves all the credits for the Cowboys' recent success, not quarterback Dak Prescott. This is Jason Garrett's doing. The Cowboys have now won 3 games in a row. They have beaten Philadelphia, Washington, and Atlanta, and Jason Garrett has pulled this team from what looked like certain doom. It looked like they were circling the drain. Now he has them back on track, contending for a playoff spot. Hey, say what you want about Jason Garrett. He deserves a lot of credit here. I'm not sure if that's true, though. I'm not sure if I buy that. You know who deserves the credit? No, not Dak Prescott. I'm not even sure if it's the defense. I think the guy that actually deserves the credit for the Cowboys' turnaround? It's running back Ezekiel Elliott. In those 3 wins, Ezekiel Elliott has rushed for 121, 122, and 151 yards. As a result of Elliott's production, the pressure comes off of Prescott. And it also hides that Cowboys defense. Now, have the Cowboys had more of an emphasis on the running game during this stretch? Sure they have. But they should have had an emphasis on the running game, every single year, and they never do. Are we seriously being told right now that head coach Jason Garrett deserves credit for doing what he should have been doing the entire time he's been in Dallas?
What's on a cookie?
I don't know if I'm buying that. That just sounds like more silliness. Jason Garrett is supposed to be a smart guy. He doesn't always strike me as being that smart with what he does. Feed Ezekiel Elliott. If they stop him, keep feeding him. If you get behind, keep feeding him. Dallas always seems to stop. In the last 3 weeks, they keep giving him the ball. They've had some success, but they keep giving him the ball. I don't think Jason Garrett deserves a cookie for something he should have been doing the entire time. One other sports media overreaction that we are getting this week, and this one's a little bit more bizarre. We are hearing that Los Angeles Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers may have put together the greatest game ever played by a quarterback this last week. Then we heard that Tennessee Titans quarterback Marcus Mariota, he might have put together one of the greatest performances ever by a quarterback in the league. On Sunday, Philip Rivers went 28 of 29. He had 259 yards passing. He had 3 touchdowns, and the Chargers beat the Cardinals 45-10. I mean, 1 incompletion? Pretty impressive stuff. That's amazing. On Monday night, Marcus Mariota for the Tennessee Titans went 22 of 23. He had 303 yards and 2 touchdowns. These might be some of the most amazing quarterback performances of all time. Yeah, except not really. Is the sports media world seriously saying Philip Rivers beating the Arizona Cardinals in a Week 11 matchup is an all-time performance? It's the Cardinals. They are one of the worst teams in the league. I don't care if Philip Rivers goes 50 for 50 against the Cardinals. Hey, nice game. But no pressure versus a really bad team and you were playing at home? Yeah, I don't know if it's the most clutch performance I've ever seen. A midseason game against a horrible team. And then Marcus Mariota, he couldn't even win his game. I like Marcus Mariota. They didn't even come out on top in that game. You know, maybe it's just me. But when I think of great performances in a game, like all-time great performances, I think of a little bit of a bigger stage. I think of like Steve Young throwing 6 touchdowns in a Super Bowl. Not in like a mid-season game against a bad team. In a Super Bowl. I think of someone like Phil Simms having just 3 incompletions again in a Super Bowl. In the biggest football game on the planet. I think of those kind of games. Those performances, Steve Young, Phil Simms, they might just barely edge out Phil Rivers beating up on the Cardinals and Marcus Mariota losing to the Houston Texans during the midseason. I'm not sure that I'm going to stack those up quite as high. You know what I think these 2 performances do tell me? I think they are way more of a reflection on what the NFL is in this era. The game is completely tilted in favor of the offense. The fact that we saw Mariota and Rivers, same weekend, have nearly a perfect game, tells me it's not the player. And I'm not dogging either one of these players. I like both these guys. It tells me it's the game, though. It tells me it's the rules. Can I tell you when I think the game changed? I think it was in 2 major spots that the NFL changed. When the league banned those head-to-head collisions and all of the defenseless receiver stuff, hitting receivers over the middle of the field, that changed the game completely. Because no longer could you blow up receivers over the middle. Now, think about that in today's game. Take the little guys we've seen lately, the Wes Welkers and Julian Edelmans and Antonio Browns and Tyreek Hills and Brandon Cooks. Can you imagine those receivers going over the middle against players like Jack Tatum and Ronnie Lott and Steve Atwater? They'd be taking them out on a stretcher. It wouldn't last. That rule change completely changed the NFL. And then, of course, the legislation to protect the quarterbacks, obviously, it has completely changed this game as well. All of the defensive holding, all of the pass interference, that stuff magnifies these 2 rules, but those 2 rules have changed the game into this model we see now. The game is just so much easier for the offense. It isn't the steroid era from baseball, but right now in the NFL, we are absolutely seeing the inflated performance-enhancing era of offensive football in the National Football League. And I've got news for you. It's not going anywhere anytime soon, because I think there's a lot of young fans out there that love these basketball scores in football. I think the performances we are seeing in the NFL right now, I think we're just beginning. I think this offensive stuff is here to stay. I don't know if it's good or if it's bad, but I know this. I know that kids absolutely love it. Hey, I have to say thank you all so much for listening to The Daily Dose every single day. Thank you for the feedback. Thank you for the questions and the suggestions. Thank you so much for sharing the show. Don't forget to head over to tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear for that Daily Dose listener in your life. Knock out some of that holiday shopping. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a great Thursday.